Taking Ship, a guided cruise through dumbest timeline America. I am Frank Spring. With me is Ellie Jacobs, the man who you want in your corner in a moment of crisis, when crisis strikes, or when you wish to strike a crisis. Hello, Ellie.
Yeah, I feel it's very apt right now that we're doing all kinds of crisis simulations and preparedness. As always, we'd like to thank all of our listeners for their comments, both positive and negative, and urge everybody to subscribe and rate us on iTunes and follow us on the Twitters at Taking Ship. And that's Ship with a P as in pandemonium. And that's uncoordinated with Frank's crisis mention. So we're just in sync all over the place. In addition to the Twitters, you should check out our website, www.takingship.com, where you can order your t-shirts. We're about halfway sold out, so please get yours soon. If you order by the 31st, you still get that 20% discount. And we'll provide in-person delivery to TrueCon 18, where we'll also be selling the leftover stock at full price. So tell us how large of a size you'd like and how many you'd like, much like whiskey.
That is right. And today we are joined there. We have an officer on deck. It is a very special episode. The godfather of this podcast, the Commodore himself, Jason Stanford, is here in studio. And by that, I mean sitting at the same table as I am. Hello, Jason.
Hello, Frank. Hello, Ellie. Thank you for having me. And Ellie, I cannot believe how much you screwed up that whiskey line. That was just an embarrassment to jokes.
I've made it worse and worse each week after the
first time. Oh, my God. Really? That's after practice?
No kidding.
You're like the montage in a comedy movie done in reverse.
Yeah. It's like when they do the outtakes during the credits, except we do it at the beginning of the show.
Well, that's good. Yes. Yeah, it's excellent. Yeah.
This is how we get warmed up. You know.
Yeah.
It's like when I'm in the gym and I begin by dropping a kettlebell on my foot and then going from there.
Going home?
Going home and
having a good cry. That's,
so I see you're on the same workout regimen that I am.
Well, yes.
Perfect.
All right. Well, now that we have the Commodore on deck, what are we talking about today?
I think we're going to start with a judge's ruling. Partly because when something is this 2018, you just have to confess it. A federal judge
representative of Dumbest Timeline America.
Yeah, this is straight from the bowels of Dumbest Timeline America. Comes a federal district court judge who ruled on Wednesday, that would be today, that President Donald Trump can't block people from viewing his Twitter feed. So, yeah, you can't. Apparently, the Donald likes to block people who piss him off. People have made a glorious sport of pissing off Donald Trump on Twitter. My personal favorite variant is when they send him a direct message or tell him they have secret information that will help him, and then ask him if he is familiar with BOFA or something. And his direct messages, he hates that and blocks people. So, yes, it was at one point and may still be possible to BOFA the President of the United States via Twitter.
I can imagine him not liking to be BOFA'd.
Yeah.
I imagine he is more of a BOFA-er.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Except that being able to land that particular joke is beyond his sense of timing.
If he did land it, he'd go back then and talk about how he landed it and how many people are saying that he was very funny.
Yeah. I mean, what would happen is that he would spend a lot of time talking about how he BOFA'd Heather Locklear in 1987. And she was very, very interested, very interested. She was married at the time, but she was extremely interested. And unfortunately, because of scheduling, things just couldn't work out.
But clearly, there
was definitely something there.
And with all the BOFA'ing going on, clearly, if there were a problem with his size, then this would be well known.
Yeah.
Like, obviously, there's no problem down there.
Yeah, people have thanked him for BOFA-ing them.
So
this is the best BOFA.
As horribly sideways as this conversation has already gone,
just
we're really just kind of going off of what the president has already said out loud live on TV.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. None of this is particularly original material. That's the Taking Ship promise. We bring you, only the finest of other people's jokes. This is fun only in the sense that it gives you an idea of just how tangled and deeply messed up the entire communication structure of the United States of America is right now when you've got a federal judge ruling on the president of the United States and blocking on Twitter. As you might guess, we are fans of blocking on Twitter. Everyone should block everyone. We our come follow us on Twitter. We will block you immediately. The whole thing should just be a series of people blocking each other until all goes silent.
You guys like blocking on Twitter?
I actually don't, except in very few circumstances.
I don't want to give anyone the satisfaction.
Yeah, I'm a great muter of people.
I like reporting people.
Reporting people is a solid one.
I block three people, I think, just because I don't want to see what they're posting. Not that I have any bad, like, ill will towards them, or, well, actually, one of them I probably have ill will. I block Ben Shapiro, Ben Rhodes, and Michael Doran at the Hudson Institute.
Mm-hmm. You know, someone, because you said this out loud, now someone will send them this podcast.
Mm-hmm. Well, if anything, if Ben Shapiro mentions us on his podcast, we just sold all of our T-shirts and have to get better bandwidth so more people can listen to us, because nobody gets people to hate listen to things like Ben Shapiro.
Well, that's good.
It's true. It's true. Nonetheless, we've made a powerful enemy, or at least some kind of enemy. A short one, anyway.
Do you think Trump blocked Seb Gorka?
Okay.
Or the other way around?
Which happened first?
Oh, my God. That's a sentence that someone said out loud, and it made sense.
I would assume, yeah. It pains me to do this, Mr. President, but I'm afraid I shall have to block you. For you see, it is all part of my plan. I cannot divulge what I do not know, Mr. President. And so with great reluctance in my heart and tears in my eyes, I press the button and block the great Donald Trump out of love, not out of spite.
Do you think Gorka knows he's not in the line of succession?
Hmm?
Do you think Gorka knows he's not in the line of succession, or are people just like letting him keep that
at the moment, Bailey Jacobs, for the time being?
Well, he's not in the public line of succession. He is, though, in the real one.
I mean, look, if British history has taught us anything, it's that given enough resources, planning, and execution, you can change the line of succession to the throne.
Oh, sure.
It ain't hard.
All he has
and by that, I mean it's fantastically difficult.
Yes. So John Cornyn blocks me. The senior senator from Texas, and it was always fun when his office would call and ask for a favor to arrange some press conference, something like that. Me, very agreeable and happy to do it. And then I'd ask, my last ask of the whole thing was, and can the senator stop blocking me on Twitter?
Sure.
No, I'm sure I did something to deserve this. It was horrible. Mm. But I went through the same thing when I was communications director for the mayor, and Uber and Lyft were running a pressure campaign trying to get us to bend to their will. We were under the now popular notion that people should not rape women.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Uber was not completely
many
on board.
Many people are saying this now.
Many people are saying this. Uber was not at the time completely on board.
Mm.
And Lyft did not feel empowered to stand up to Uber. In any case, there were some really nasty things said in our way on Twitter. And I just started blocking people. But then it occurred to me, the mayor's Twitter account, as silly as the notion as this sentence will turn out to be, is a government function, and you can't like just block people from receiving government services, such as they are at 140 characters each, just because they're annoying d-bags.
Mm-hmm.
If that were so, whole boy.
If that were so, we could jail huge numbers of people.
They would be full and overflowing.
I know.
Be beautiful.
Yeah. And then this time, the right people would be getting it.
Yes.
Point of clarification for our listeners who may not know, up until last Friday, Jason was the director of communications for the mayor of Austin. So he is now free and able to speak freely.
Dobby is a free elf.
Dobby is a free elf.
That's my guiding mantra this week.
Mm-hmm.
And it's nice to see Ellie tickled.
Yeah.
I made him laugh on the other end.
Anytime we can mention elves, it's always a good sign.
Yes.
I just figured, of all the things that we can talk about, elves are about as sensible as a district court having to rule that the president has to unblock people on Twitter.
That's true.
Who's going to sit with him? And is like the White House counsel going to sit with him and be like, all right, Mr. President, let's pull out all the people you blocked and let's unblock them one by one? and how quickly will those people then go on the attack once they're unblocked?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You have been unblocked. The thing that you would need is a public declaration that you had been unblocked, so it becomes open season again.
Wouldn't you just then mute them? You can mute anyone you want.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, that's my preferred go-to.
Yeah, they don't know that you don't care. It's wonderful. Mm-hmm. It's just like regular life.
Yeah, but if we know anything about Donald Trump, it's that the idea of the moderate approach is not one he takes.
Yeah, if he hates you, it's important to him that he knows, that you know he hates you. As opposed to the rest of us who are content with a small crowd of people just howling into the void. Seems very appropriate for where we are now. But speaking of perhaps not howling into the void, the democratic process took a step forward yesterday.
Woohoo!
And there were primaries in several of these several states, including Texas, Kentucky, Arkansas, and Georgia. They were Democratic primaries and Republican primaries, and for the most part, let's talk about a few of these things because I think they're illustrative. Let's start here in the Lone Star State in Texas.
Yes,
where there were a number of contested. There are a number of targeted congressional seats that Democrats have hopes of picking up,
which we are not used to at all.
Which, yeah, is not a particularly common phenomenon. There have been we've been hearing about the blueing of Texas, blue Texas, for a long time. It is a process that seems to be continuing apace, although it's always farther away than our most optimistic friends would say.
Mm-hmm.
But there are a number of targeted congressional seats here, and they featured a few. We've talked about one of them on the podcast before, at least the Texas 7th, where a few weeks ago the DCCC, the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, dropped a bunch of opposition research on one of the candidates and Mosier and tried to knock her out of the in an attempt to knock her out of the race potentially in favor of a candidate they feel has a better shot of winning. There was a significant dust up about that. Lizzie Fletcher, the preferred candidate, won that one, and indeed pretty much across the board in all of these targeted seats, it was the candidate who was favored and liked by the party establishment, if you want to call it that, that was also favored and liked by the voters of the district,
mm-hmm.
Pretty much across the board.
In Texas, for the most part, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, you know, the point that I would take away from this is that sometimes being seen as palatable to the powers that be and being an authentic person in connection with your, you know, with your community and your and grassroots activists are seen as being mutually exclusive. And I don't think they have to be mutually exclusive, not at all. I think you can run a good professional campaign, the kind that gets the attention and approval of, you know, of the establishment, again, such as it is in D.C. and in state capitals and other places, and also be connected to your communities, be yourself, and then be able to run a good campaign that mobilizes a lot of folks. And we saw that. Best example of that I can think of is probably Gene Ortiz Jones.
Mm-hmm.
But there are a few other good examples on that. Joseph Kopser, and he came back from a second place finish in the first round of the primary to win, and win pretty handily.
Yes,
by virtue of, you know, a campaign that was as energetic as it was organized. So, you know, these are just a couple of examples of folks that have been on the establishment radar for a while and have also done the work in their community. So congratulations to them.
And what we, what a lot of people were expecting to see was a continuation of the pink wave.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Joseph Kopser was in a field with four people, one of whom was a local minister, didn't run much of a campaign, but because she was a woman, she finished in first place. And the fear among Kopser's partisans, and my wife works for him, Joseph's a friend of mine, the fear was that just because he was running against a woman, he would lose. Well, he won big. Mm-hmm. So I think what it shows is, yes, women do have structural advantages right now in
for the first time in human history.
Mazel. So, you know, I guess we're done with that.
We're done with that.
Next. But if a woman runs effectively no campaign,
mm-hmm.
or, you know, spends less than $100,000, we're talking about signs, runs mm-hmm. a sign campaign against a guy who's raised $1 million and is on TV and is running a real sincere campaign out there campaigning and getting real support, and well, she's probably going to lose. Mm-hmm. But Gina Ortiz Jones in the first round, taking it to Texas 23, which used to be our only swing district in mm-hmm. in the whole state, which we should touch on a little bit. Gene Ortiz Jones was not the DCCC's candidate in the first round.
Mm-hmm.
That was some guy named Joe or John or some damn thing.
Mm-hmm.
Castro Brothers.
Joe John.
Yeah, let's call him Steve.
Mm-hmm.
And the establishment, such as it was behind him. Well, she had Emily's List.
Mm-hmm.
And she's also a fantastic candidate who knows exactly who she is, mm-hmm. tells her story in a really authentic way.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely no one else can tell her story. And it makes sense, and you can't knock her off her feet with her story. And she went through a real trial by fire because mm-hmm. the San Antonio Express News editorial board decided she was a phony and she was a one-trick pony. And I did not mean to run. I apologize for that. And she just kept telling her story and mm-hmm. saying why she had to do this. And she won them over. And she finished far ahead of everyone else in the first round, far ahead of her opponent, who was a Bernie bro in this one, Rick Trevino, which, you know, comma, not the country singer, is, is going to go in every one of these stories. She was a great candidate. MJ Hagar, who is a combat vet, helicopter pilot, right? Who's injured in combat, I think. These are extraordinarily talented candidates that are the kind of which we weren't able to normally get to run. And I think we could talk about establishment versus grassroots. We could talk about, is this the year of the woman? What I'm left with is how incredible these congressional candidates are. Like, if they become part of our congressional delegation, then suddenly we have this, then suddenly the Castros aren't the only guys on the bench. We've got a lot of talent coming our way, and that's exciting.
That's extreme. That's absolutely right. And, you know, Jean Ortiz Jones, as you talk about talent, and again, we're going to stay with her because I think she's the really great example of this. She would be, not only, I mean, she is a would be considered the cream of the crop of congressional candidates in Texas, but she would be a top-tier congressional candidate in any district in the country. I mean, this is, she, I mean, she would be competitive anywhere by virtue of, again, as you say, she tells her story well. She obviously has run a disciplined professional enterprise, which is, you know, not quite as common as we'd like for it to be. But she certainly got it. But she certainly did it with her campaign. So yeah, she would be, and that is, and it's a good example of the kind of talent that is popping up across Texas politics and in other places as well. I would like what the way you described her also applies to another winner from yesterday. Amy McGrath in Kentucky, and we're going to come back to Texas here in a minute, but I think this dovetails really nicely with that. We've talked about Amy McGrath on this podcast before. She announced her presence with authority last summer with a truly terrific opening ad in which she talked about her story, told her story well, told it with authenticity. She came out of nowhere, absolutely political unknown, running in the Kentucky 6th, which is the area of Lexington. I highly recommend visiting that neck of the woods. If you're there, go to Stella's Kentucky Deli. You won't regret it. And there was a dust up locally and maybe a little bit of bad blood because there was a story about how the DCCC had recruited the mayor of Lexington, Jim Gray, to run for that congressional seat as well, which they see as their only pickup opportunity in Kentucky this cycle. And so there was a sense that, well, the establishment was swinging in behind Jim Gray. As a matter of fact, McGrath never faltered. She raised a lot of money. She continued to raise money. She continued to tell her story and to run an energetic and very authentic campaign. And this is not a particular shot at Jim Gray, but she did such a good job and just went from strength to strength that having recruited and understandably recruited the popular Democratic mayor of a pickup district. I mean, the DTrip's decision wasn't unreasonable. That's exactly what you would do in those circumstances. But having recruited him, having essentially left the field open then, I mean, I happen to know there are a lot of folks in the DTrip building who are very excited about Amy McGrath, have been for a while because she's been emerging as this really, really good candidate. So, you know, these are talented folks in places where, you know, and this is just a good indication of where we are in the stage of the cycle. Those were two credible candidates in a district where, you know, 2 years, four, six, 8 years ago, you couldn't have found one.
Yep. Yeah. So you run into the issue, and we'll probably talk about this a little bit more as we go through these primaries. You run into some of the issue that a lot of these districts that Democrats in particular, are very excited about. There's still a huge uphill climb when you get to the general because, you know, as we saw in the Georgia 6th, a lot of these districts, there just aren't enough Democrats. So you really do have to figure out a way to either get everybody out plus more people or figure out how to get people on the other side to support you. And when you have a good candidate that can be authentic and tells a good story, that usually helps a lot. I think the Gina Ortiz race against Will Hurd is going to be really, really interesting because he's an interesting character in his own right. They both have military experience to go head to head on a lot of issues. So I think that that'll be a really interesting one to watch over the coming, you know, 6 months.
And as you said, like this is an exciting time in many respects to be a Democrat. Good, solid candidates, tier one candidates are emerging in places, in races that are newly tier one. That's really encouraging. But again, I mean, these are uphill climbs. And there's a lot of ground to make up, and not all of these folks are going to win, and a lot of the time it's not going to be their fault.
Yeah, I think the Kentucky district is an R+8, and the guy won his last race by 20 or something.
Yeah, It's going to take some doing. A lot of these places are the kind of places that turn on big waves, and But I remember this. I mean, in my the district in which I grew up, New Mexico Congressional District 1, was had a Democratic registration advantage for many, many years. But it had a Republican congressman for more than 30, if memory serves, since its creation, almost 40 years, and then it turned blue in 2008. So with the election of Congressman Martin Heinrich, now Senator Martin Heinrich, and then there was it turned blue during a wave, and there was a kind of sense. We almost got there in 2006, didn't quite make it. Got there in 2008. So successive waves finally take the seat back, and then had to defend it. And in 2010, in a real gunfight, then in 2012. It became essentially a safe Democratic seat. It's not considered. New Mexico Congressional District 1 is now a seat for Democrats. The primary is the general there. And what we have seen is some of those places that only turn with a wave and that even come up short on a wave, the infrastructure that can be built, the momentum, the change in the idea, like, hey, this is a winnable seat. Something happens to the way that voters, and particularly Democratic voters, think about turning out. It becomes a doable prospect. So even if some of these folks come up a little bit short, the mere fact of having put really previously unassailable districts in play and almost gotten there can have a very powerful long-term effect.
Yeah, and you can also, some of the swing voters may start looking at Democrats as not having, cloven hooves and horns on their heads and start voting Democratic, where ordinarily they may not have. But once you put forward a candidate that's reasonable and approachable and authentic, suddenly they could be continue sitting in that seat for a long time with bigger and bigger vote margins.
Yeah, that's right. And that's a really good point, because in a lot of these places, there hasn't been a candidate, or they haven't been targeted. They haven't had, money spent on direct voter contact or communications, on paid communications for a long time. Some of these districts haven't seen a Democrat. It's not so much true of Kentucky, where there have been some very contentious Senate races, but some of these places are places where there haven't been big Democratic pushes before. A lot of them are. Texas has had a few as part of the Blue in Texas program.
Right. But I mean, our big problem in Texas is pessimism. Mm-hmm. We've got the second lowest voter turnout by percentage, obviously, in the country. People just don't think there's any point to voting, mm-hmm. especially at the statewide level, because there doesn't seem to be any point to it. Mm-hmm. A Democrat's going to show up and get about 40%. Mm-hmm. And if you like the band with which within that context where you seem to have any effect is about 5 points. Mm-hmm. You can raise it a few, you can lower it a few. But if Frank Springs, our nominee for land commissioner, he'll get about 40% in a normal year. And then Trump comes along and Hillary only loses Texas by 9%. And suddenly, there's a level of people, like the political class, said, oh, wait, so things are winnable now. Mm-hmm. So they start to believe, and they notice that there are a few congressional districts where Hillary won, where the Democrat didn't win before, mm-hmm. Like Texas 7, like Texas, 23, and there's one mm-hmm. up in the Dallas area, I forget which one that is, that Allred, the former NFL player, mm-hmm. who won the nomination. In any case, it gets them to start believing, and the combination of everyone finding themselves in America's timeline mm-hmm. and seeing a national political environment where Democrats are winning races where they shouldn't win or have normally been competitive, and seeing this sort of stuff coming, all of these are the things that add up and make a big wave. Mm-hmm. So we'll see if it's big enough.
Yeah,
but there is definitely a way.
All right. We want to talk about anything. Sorry.
Do we want to talk more about Georgia or Arkansas?
We saw similar things, I think, in Arkansas. Georgia is interesting just because, that one, I think, was a little bit less establishment. The big news, establishment versus grassroots or whatever, the big news coming out of that one is that Stacey Abrams mm-hmm. Beat Stacey Evans. It was the all Stacey campaign, a good one, but it was perceived as being very, very close. And Stacey Abrams actually walked away with a pretty significant margin,
right?
Over Stacey Evans. It was, there was a sense that it was divided along racial lines because Stacey Abrams was black and is black, and Stacey Evans is white. But in point of fact, I think that what we saw from the vote total was, Stacey Abrams made a case that was compelling pretty much across the board, mm-hmm. and walked away with a very significant margin of victory.
Yeah, Ellen won out.
Yes, and this is it, right? That's one where just looking at the way that thing is proceeding, the better you know, the better candidate, you know, as we would say, the better political athlete walked away with it.
I think it's underrated, especially in governor's race, how important it is that you like how you feel mm-hmm. when they talk.
Mm-hmm.
Wendy Davis had a lot going for her, but when she talked, I got tense.
Mm.
She had a lot, she probably still does have a lateral lisp,
mm-hmm.
which made it hard for her to say the name of the state. It would come out mm-hmm. in Texas,
mm-hmm.
which grates a little.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a forced quality where she was trying to control the tone of her voice in a way where it just didn't seem relaxed. Doesn't mm-hmm. seem nearly, contrast that with listening to Stacey Abrams talk this morning in her recording of her victory speech. I found myself just relaxing.
Mm-hmm.
How rare is it that when you're involved in the political mindset that you relax mm-hmm. when you're listening to a politician? And I think to be able to do that, to be able to talk about the world in a way where people know you're telling them the truth, and two, you're giving them some vision of where you want to go. Some, you're describing a better world. And to do that in a way where people are caught up in just the sound of your voice. I mean, Stacey Abrams has got those tools, and that's a rare combination.
It matters hugely. I mean, that was a lot of the appeal. And there's substance behind this as well, but that's the first thing in many respects. You can you win a lot of your permission for the substance to be heard based on whether people just like listening to you. And to a certain degree, there's natural talent at work here. Some people are born with better instruments than others, with their voice and how to use them. But this can be taught.
We are not all Frank Spring. I basically.
Thank God for that. My God.
Yes.
The real problem with my voice is there's entirely too much of it. But the issue.
You solved the supply problem.
Absolutely.
Now let's just work on the demand
problem.
The damn demand.
Just going to keep supplying until something happens.
Let me make one more point about Georgia. Mm-hmm. Dave Weigel tweeted out late last night, or it looked like. And if you're not following Dave Weigel on Twitter, reading the stuff in the Washington Post, you're missing that. He notices things no one else notices. It's great. He tweeted this late last night. Georgia Republicans outvoted Democrats by around 50,000 ballots in the Georgia governor primary. 4 years ago, that margin was around 250,000 votes. So a lot of times you see...
That's a wild stat.
Yeah.
That's really wild.
And you can be discouraged that there weren't as many Democrats voting as Republicans, as we saw here in Texas. Mm-hmm. But when that's how you start to see a wave, when more people start showing up in a primary.
Mm-hmm.
And that usually indicates that more people, you know, that doesn't mean just the many and just that proportion will show up in the general. And sometimes it indicates that there's a gathering storm.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's an excellent point. And this is a combination of structural, as you say, the wave, structural response to what happened in 2016, and then also as a function of that, candidates with real talent popping mm-hmm. up and running top tier campaigns. To the earlier point about voice and how you feel when you listen to a candidate, just for everyone who has any doubt about this stuff, mm-hmm. this can be taught. It can be taught. If you are running, if you're working with someone and this is an issue, do not assume it is a limitation you have to accept. You can get there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Bill Clinton's a perfect example. I mean, he's a naturally gifted speaker in his own way, but he did a lot of work before the 92 race and then subsequently to get even better. It's something that can be trained. It's not easy, and somebody's got to be committed to wanting to do it. And it's not and if you're working as a consultant, it's not an easy conversation to have with your candidate to say, people don't like listening to you, boss. We got to work on that. But it's incredibly important. And it's also not just it's not just obviously what people say and how they say it and what it sounds like when you hear them. It's also you want the candidate to actually believe what they're saying. And I think that that's been a little bit of a change this cycle as well. But you're seeing a lot of candidates come out, and because they're being, and we keep using the word authentic, because they're being authentic and true to themselves, they actually truly believe what they're saying and believe that what they want to push forward is best for the country and best for their districts and best for their states.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the combined effect's very powerful.
Well put.
And speaking of combined and powerful effects, we are now going to investigate the power of yes and also the power of no in a new segment that we're calling Kitchen Hacks with Ellie, or more accurately.
No, we're not calling it that. It's called Yes or No with Ellie Jacobs.
Yes or No with Ellie Jacobs, thank you.
Right.
Yes or
this so you can ask him
this newly renamed
every
segment.
Week. Yeah, right.
That's exactly right. It's called Yes or No with Ellie
You're
Jacobs.
You're not limited to kitchen hacks.
No.
It could be living room hacks. Any room of the house.
Any number of ideas that we can put to the judgment of Ellie Jacobs.
Why don't you give the origin story?
Speaking of authenticity. whereas we're looking for more supply of Frank, we are distinctly trying to downgrade the supply of Ellie's words.
What we're going for here, that's exactly right. We're going for here is quality rather than quantity. What we want is more of Ellie's opinion, but expressed more briefly. It's a concentrated push for Ellie. What we want is a concentration of Jacob's.
Exactly. Frank, why don't you tell the puzzled listeners at home how we came about this?
Oh, yeah. So the editor, former editor of Deadspin, the sports blog, Tim Marchman, pushes basically in written form. I think he's talked about it in a couple of podcasts. He'll tell anyone to listen about what he views as the best way to drink coffee, especially iced coffee, which is brew your iced coffee, and then then the mixture, the way to drink it is iced coffee, little milk, little sugar, if that's what you like, and then top off with soda water, sparkling water. That's his recommendation. It is a really good way. It's a little bit like a coffee egg cream. Mm-hmm. I think it's an excellent way of drinking iced coffee. Jason was having one earlier before we started recording this. He described it to Ellie Jacobs, whose immediate response was, no. And I wish you missed something not having the visual element of it.
It was GIF worthy.
It was GIF worthy. Ellie, and this has happened many times, Ellie's snap decisions of yes or no are truly some of the finest moments of judgment and performance
he's I've also ever seen. Performatively adorable. And I think Ed Jacob's adorable nature gets enough run on this podcast.
That's or exactly
truly
right.
Anywhere.
Really, honestly, anywhere.
Probably his wife doesn't notice it.
Most anymore. People don't know that Ellie Jacobs is adorable.
That's right.
I mean, if you just passed him on the street being interviewed about Jared Kushner,
you would think that area man is very tall.
You would think this area man is indulging in Bertie Wooster cosplay.
Mm.
You would think this area man owns at least one suit.
You would think this area man has been to a fine museum recently.
Yes. You would think this area man really hopes that they get the lower third Chiron right about him because it's written in a language that he doesn't understand.
You would hope that you have an interesting dilemma to pose to area man because he looks like he would have very good recommendations.
You would think this area man is plausible enough to sell you almost anything.
You would think area man would look good in a hat.
You would think that area man honestly should look into his own line of glasses.
Area man is well known for many things, none so much as his judgment.
Yes,
which brings us back to
yes or no with Ellie Jacobs. So we have here a list. This one is kitchen hacks. We have here a list of kitchen hacks, and we are going to run them quickly by Ellie Jacobs. Ellie Jacobs will give us a yes or no. Is this a good kitchen hack or not a good kitchen
hack? These are from the magazine Cooking Light. These are not just kitchen hacks. These are the greatest kitchen hacks every cook should know. All right, make hard-cooked eggs a cinch to peel, Ellie. Instead of boiling the traditional way, steam up to a dozen eggs in a steamer basket suspended over boiling water for 15 to 16 minutes. The shells slip right off. What say you?
I mean, I don't like hard-boiled eggs, so I'm probably not the right person on this one, but that just sounds like a lot of work.
We're looking for a yes or no. We're not looking for your thoughts.
Yeah. Okay, John.
That's where we're talking. All right. Make the best roasted veggies. Place the pan in the oven as it preheats. When the vegetables hit that hot surface, they get a delicious jump start on browning.
Solid yes.
Okay.
That is a hack that I do.
Just a yes or no. Adjectives.
Supply and demand. Sorry.
Right. We're trying to artificially create some scarcity, which will... this is the mortgage-backed securities theory of Ellie's popularity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And what could possibly go wrong?
Out of a junk bond, we're going to create millions.
I'm looking
millions.
Forward to leveraging Ellie's judgment and popularity.
There you go. All right, here's a way you can improvise a brush. When you can't find your pastry or basting brush, and who hasn't been in this situation before, mm-hmm. make a quick disposable stand-in. Fold a piece of parchment paper over and over to make a small rectangle. Cut fringe with kitchen scissors and marvel at your makeshift brush.
No.
Good. That's I think he's got it now.
Yeah. I think it was the marveling at what you've done that really, really pushed this thing over the edge. And who can blame him?
Okay. Making powdered sugar. If you find that you're out of powdered sugar and you really need it, pulverize granulated sugar in a spice grinder to make your own.
Yes.
Okay.
I didn't see that coming, actually.
Warm things up. I know, it's a shock.
Oh.
Yeah. This pro move keeps dishes that tend to set up quickly, like risotto or creamy pasta, including mac and cheese, which is good for you with your baby. Okay, this helps these dishes stay nice and loose. Serve on warm plates. What? That's it?
That's bullshit.
No, come on. Sorry, we're skipping, Elliot.
That's we can't ask
what a load of crap.
Your judgment is too precious.
We're not bringing that to him.
No. Plate. Oh, man. We failed you on that one.
We've also revealed ourselves as not having rehearsed this at all.
How would be us? Oh, God, the listeners will know we don't prepare. What will happen now? No.
And they're like, shut up, get to the next hack.
I just like the fact that the Commodore thought that we'd prepare. I feel like we're actually duping somebody.
It's always a shock. Here's a way you can cool things down, Ellie.
Please don't tell me it's going to serve it on a cold plate. Good.
Oh, Lord. No, this is really funny. If you're sauteing onions, as one does, mm-hmm. and they start to get too brown as they do.
Every cook's worst nightmare.
Toss in an ice cube to chill down the pan fast. The water will evaporate quickly and your onions will be saved.
Oh, God.
No.
Okay. Speed up meatloaf, Ellie.
Fast when you want. Who moves that has meatloaf and fast?
We've done it with warming up. We've done it with cooling down. Now we're speeding up.
Bend space and time with roast beef.
Mm-hmm. When you've got a hankering for a hunk of meat, but don't want to wait.
Oh,
the copy editor.
No.
Somewhere.
No.
I'm saying no. Just.
Okay. This is actually kind of funny. All right. Make wine cubes. Have a bottle of wine.
Yes. Good.
Go with a serrated knife. When you're overdue on sharpening your knives and just can't get to the sharpening stone, switch to your serrated knife for all your cutting tasks. The saw-like blade will do a much better job than your dull, straight-bladed knives.
I mean, that's fairly obvious. I feel like psychopathic killers.
We're just looking for a yes or no.
Yes.
Good. All right. Ignore egg days. We often joke that eggs never go bad. That's really just a joke. They certainly can and do go bad.
Yes. But not according to these people.
But the salmonella.
Brave the salmonella. It's a conspiracy. It doesn't really exist. But it's like witches and dinosaurs.
And elves.
And elves, exactly.
We're not looking for a response yet, though.
Fuck you and your beer, Kyle.
But the sell-by date on the carton isn't your guide to whether the egg is still good. Don't automatically toss them after that date. Instead, place an egg in a glass of water. Good eggs sink, bad eggs float. It's sort of counterintuitive to sinking and floating.
So try your egg as if it were a medieval witch.
No. Okay. Forget the spout. Oh, this is good. It has the word kosher in it. You'll like it. We know you've had frustrations with that spout on your box of kosher salt, injuring yourself under your fingernail, or struggling to pour that last bit out of that tiny, poorly placed hole. Instead, slice a corner off the box with a serrated knife. Ellie?
I didn't know that Jews were being blamed for cutting people's thumbs, so no.
That one feels like the setup to an as seen on TV product. You know,
yes.
Someone like injures themselves on a loaf of bread.
Yeah,
they're like, are you tired of your loaves of bread breaking your thumbs? You know, so I'm someone like trying to make a sandwich.
Did the rye make you die?
That's exactly right.
Tame that butternut.
God damn it! No.
Pop a whole butternut squash in the microwave. And zap it for 2 to 3 minutes. It'll be much easier to peel, seed, and cube.
No.
Soften and sweeten bananas fast. Ready to make banana bread, but your fruit isn't ripe enough? Place the bananas in their peels on a parchment-lined pan or plate and toss in the oven as it preheats or in the microwave for a few minutes to speed ripen them. When skins are blackened, bananas are ready.
No.
Save wilty greens. When your spinach or kale is on the verge of going bad and you have more than you'll be able to use tonight, freeze it in a zip-top freezer bag. Next time you need greens for a cooked application, saute, soup, omelet, or stir fry, for examples, just pull them out of the freezer and toss them in.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah.
I'm going to do that. Totally makes sense.
Sure.
Yeah, frozen stuff, thrown in a hot pan, mm-hmm. Always fun.
Yeah.
Okay, I don't understand. This is, all right, when toasting nuts, At 325 degrees, the perfect temp to coax out the natural oils, toast a lot, freeze extras, and save a step in the future.
Making the note we're missing here is actually, forget all the stuff you just heard about nuts. I'm going to give this to you, just the title and title alone. Are you ready? Because I think I know how you're going to respond to this one. Are you ready? This is our kitchen hack. Making some, make more.
It's just...
Yes or no answer. If you are making some,
yes,
make
more. Obviously.
Yes. Yes. All right. That's even before you get to the nuts.
Yeah, if they hadn't fucked up the nuts thing. It was the nuts thing that really did away with it.
Oh, God. Truss a chicken without twine.
Yeah.
Make a slit.
I'll be damned, sir.
Make a slit in the excess skin on either side of the cavity and thread drumsticks through the slits. Works like a charm. Why truss in the first place, you ask? It helps the bird cook more evenly and maintains its nice compact shape.
No.
Yeah. Right. Correct.
That's the correct answer.
Cook perfect fish every time.
That's the hack face. No. There's no further details. No.
Try a better buttermilk sub. They mean substitution, right? Not sub as in...
Yes, that's what I thought was a Subway sandwich of buttermilk.
That's not where I went.
This is terrible.
What would be a buttermilk dom?
Oh, yeah, that too. Yeah. That especially. Yeah, no, you're right. That does.
Buttermilk sub sounds like a really creepy like shubs genre on Reddit.
Yeah, that's like a regionalism of sub dom. It's definitely like a buttermilk sub. Like something Iowa? You find like,
yeah, Wisconsin.
Yeah, well, certainly there. And down in and down in even I think through Nebraska and Kansas down into the great state of Texas. Depends on really how you make your cornbread.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right.
I don't think we need to go any further into that one.
I want to. Okay. No, all right. Fine. You're right. Save yourself some washing. When taking raw meat to the grill, transport it on a foil-lined platter or baking sheet. After the food is on the grill, discard the foil. Cooked food can go on the pan without your having to wash it first.
Pass. I don't even feel like I can comment on that. It's just so dumb. It's so obvious.
Friends, I'm sorry to report that the good people at Cooking Light are really reaching at this point.
How many more days we got?
We only got three more.
All right. Press on.
Waste not. Measure flour, sugar, and other dry ingredients in a dry measuring cup set on top of a sheet of wax paper or parchment paper. Oh, for fuck's sake.
I'm telling you, we're down to the necks and gizzards on this
one. How do they do it? Wait.
These are so painful.
Oh, God.
Like, no. What's the next one? Don't piss yourself. Like, as you're cooking, try and remain continent. Oh, okay. I'll give that one a shot next time.
Almost. Steady the bag.
Oh, no.
When pouring gravy or leftover soup into a Ziploc plastic bag, place the bag in a large glass measuring cup or bowl. Cuff the top of the bag by folding it over, which holds the bag open and keeps things tidy.
Steady the bag, Ellie?
Steady the bag, yes.
Save yourself from yourself. All right. We're getting through this. We're doing this. Build in portion control with your next batch of cookies. Oh, fuck this.
No.
Sorry. No. No.
Hell no.
No.
I do really appreciate that when we had Jason on the last time, he mentioned that when he originally envisioned the podcast, he wanted it to be a home care.
Oh, yeah.
Sure.
A housekeeping podcast. So he's brought it back very subtly.
All right, here's our last one. Make stock while you sleep. No time to fuss over a steaming stock pot. Place stock ingredients in a Dutch oven and bake uncovered at 225 degrees for 8 hours or overnight. For a slightly less rich tasting stock, cook in a slow cooker on low overnight. In the morning, skim, strain, and bring to room temp and refrigerate.
So,
don't they sell that in a store?
No, homemade stock is really good. I highly recommend it. I use it in everything.
In like what?
I make it. You use it in pasta recipes. You can cook rice in it. Super good. Yeah, no, homemade stock is actually quite good.
If you here's how to do it while you make
Cornish pasta. Well, the thing that I really like, actually, no. First, let's get Ellie's answer. Ellie, Night Stalker.
Night Stalker.
God. Oh, no, the part that I like is the assumption that, like, if you don't do it this way, because basically what they're just saying is stock takes a long time.
Right.
Put it on for either 8 hours or overnight and go away. Do they assume that otherwise you would just be standing in front of the stove for the best part of a day? I mean, like, I just standing here watching this.
Or, well, maybe you, like, you set it up at, you know, like after you get home from work and you're like, oh, I should probably not go to sleep. And I thought, you know, I'm just...
Just up at 2 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, I got to turn the oven off.
Grimly processing stuff. Also, who, I mean, the other thing is, like, this is not fine if you want to do it this way, by all means do. But I can't think of anything I would less want to do first thing in the morning
than to
process a bunch of, like, bung water and skim away the fat.
You're not really selling me on stock.
Super good.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Plus, you can make like a little sachet of
a sachet,
yeah, of French, French herbs.
Oh,
yeah, I know, and you can feel super fancy.
Cool.
Yeah, and then your freezer is just full of old cottage cheese tubs of stock. It's awesome. Highly recommend it to everyone.
Poor Ellie.
Hey, Ellie. This has been Yes or No with Ellie Jacobs.
I feel like you guys really took advantage of the fact I had to be on mute for a long time.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It's what we call filling in the business.
Yeah. So, I mean, the area man thing could have gone on a lot longer.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I'm going to have to explain a lot of things in the episode notes.
Please. Beginning with an apology.
All you need to do is just link to that one Facebook post.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. All right. Fair enough. All right. So... We've now been yammering and playing games for 45 minutes.
Listeners, I know it feels like longer, but we promise we're letting you go.
Oh, man. Isn't this at this point qualify as kidnapping?
Yes.
After an hour?
Who has who?
I mean, Frank and I have avoided most of the charges at this point.
I like to imagine our friends who are listening to this podcast going, well, they're normally nice guys. Yeah. I won't hold this against them.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. And for everyone else, we are deeply sorry.
And the life hack of listening to us on double speed does not really do justice to the episodes, I would say.
No, it doesn't. If anything, you should listen to it on half speed so we sound incredibly drunk.
And thoughtful.
Yes.
This combination not normally occurring.
Like very... Like almost speechless with drink, philosophers.
Yeah, which is sort of, you know, Obama's like halftime, he's half speed. Mm-hmm. Like, and then he can go regular speed, and then he stops.
Yeah. Keeps you engaged.
Yeah.
With no lisp. All right. So after a decent episode with the Commodore, Jason, thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. Anytime. Now that you are no longer tied to your government job, perhaps you can join us more frequently.
We have no more opinions forever. Yes.
I would like to thank everybody for listening. Please do take the time to subscribe and rate us on iTunes or whatever podcasting listening service you use. Follow us on Twitter at @takingship. Go to our website, www.takingship.com. Order some t-shirts because you definitely want some. And with that, Frank, where are we going this week?
Friends, ghastly news from the front of the war on the sea. A team of researchers came to a startling conclusion recently about the sea creatures known as octopods, or octopi, depending on how you want to describe a multiplicity of the creature known as the octopus. The operative theory from these 33 researchers is that these creatures are in fact the result of alien intervention. That's right. The belief is that during the Cambrian explosion of life on Earth, meteors landed on Earth, bringing with them an extraterrestrial virus, which caused the squid that were alive at the time to mutate and change and to become octopi. They are in fact an alien interloper species. Now, reporting from the war on the sea, I have only one thing to say to whatever alien did this. Stay the hell out of it. This is our war on the sea. We will prosecute this on our own terms. We don't need your Johnny-come-lately octopi in here messing things up for us all. So, friends, we take now to the high seas to gather as many of these loathsome creatures as we can into a vast arc, which we will then blast off into space. Take your octopi back, whoever gave them to us. This is where we are going to settle this with the ocean without you. Friends, we take ship first for the seas and the octopi, and then for space itself.
Take care, everybody.
podcast you just heard was recorded with Anchor. If you want to make your own, download the Android or iOS app completely free from anchor.fm/podcast. That's anchor.fm/podcast.